Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about patterns. Well, friends, today we're going to do kind of a little bit of a weekly roundup, so to speak. Rather than looking at one news story, we're going to look at two events, which I will summarize for the sake of time, and then you can go home and try to guess the thing that connects these two pieces of news, or maybe I'll just tell you, I don't know. We're going to play Find the Pattern. Now, which this is a game that I have always loved, and I hope you love it too. And Find the Pattern is a great game to play and learn because you can play it every day. You got to learn to love this game. Once you start finding patterns, you'll see them everywhere, and you'll realize that finding patterns in this world is a fun game you can play anywhere, anytime, with anyone. So the first story I want us to consider is one which you have almost certainly not heard about in the news. And you almost certainly haven't heard about it in the news because the news has literally zero interest in reporting it. You see, back about a week ago, there was a British MP who spoke about the COVID vaccines and presented a cost-benefit analysis. He used only research and data from the British government itself, and he did a tiny bit of math, or maths, as they say across the pond. And the results of the math are almost incomprehensibly bad for those who are vaccine mandate advocates. They are, in fact, worse than most people. Whatever, imagine, let me give you just one paragraph of this speech. I'm quoting here. The government's own data shows that in healthy adults aged 50 to 59, it was necessary to give 256,400 booster jabs to prevent just one severe hospitalization, putting 321 people into hospital with a serious side effect from the booster, which includes obviously risk of death. For healthy 40 to 49-year-olds, that number increases to 932,500 who needed to be boosted to keep one COVID patient out of an intensive therapy unit, putting potentially 1,165 people into hospital with serious harms, death, or disability. And for healthy 30 to 39-year-olds, no one knows the answer to the number needed to be boosted to prevent a serious hospitalization because the government's data say that there has never been such a case of a person in that age group being put into intensive care due to the current variant of COVID-19. But many, indeed, on average, 1 in 800 of this group that has been boosted will have died or been disabled or seriously harmed by the booster itself. Let me repeat that because all of that may have just rushed by you. By the British government's own stats, you need to give a quarter million booster shots to healthy people in their 50s to prevent one, a single, just one and only one, individual hospitalization. Or, so to put it another way, if you give a million booster shots, then you will have prevented four severe hospitalizations from COVID, assuming they're healthy 50-somethings. But in so doing, there will be 1,250 people who will have serious side effects from getting the vaccine. And a friend of mine who has a biology degree keeps telling me to stop calling it a vaccine because it's not a vaccine, but hey, one battle at a time, know what I mean? The financial costs are also appalling. You can read about them, watch the speech, and collect all the data if you go to andrewbridgen.com, or you can go to my website, lukenagy.com, to find the links. Because if you just go and Google a search for British Parliament COVID, you'll get stuff from January, but you won't get this current story. And if you try to search for Andrew Bridgen, you won't find any stories about the speech. You won't find people debating him or calling him out for bad data. You won't find hilarious videos like we're used to seeing, you know, from the British Parliament where people are heckling each other and shouting and making government fun. No, there's none of that because Bridgen spoke to essentially an empty house. The Labour Party all left, the Social Democrats all left, the Scottish Nationalists all left, and almost everyone from the Conservative Party left. Now, to be fair, most House debates and speeches don't attract all that many people. The British House of Commons only holds, or seats, 427 of the 650 MPs, But people deliberately walked out of this speech to make a point, and the point was simple. We don't want to hear you say bad things about the vaccine or the government's role in facilitating the vaccine, and the news media have also joined in. Friends, these data, while not entirely new, are earth-shattering. And the fact that British MPs have over $1 billion, with a B, pounds invested in Big Pharma, that would suggest to a cynical man that the British government has a bit of a conflict of interest vis-a-vis the vaccine implementation and regulation. But the fact that there just aren't stories about it and the walkout, that's the part that sticks with me. But we must keep on moving. Second story today, Anna Kasparian, member of the Young Turks, a long-running, extremely liberal show, found herself in hot water recently. Why, you might ask? Well, I might reply, she had the audacity to insist that people call her a woman and not a person with a uterus. Now, that is not, you would think, something that would land someone in hot water. One would think, had they come from a sane world where people were not deranged and the culture not degenerate, that not referring to someone by degrading them to nothing more than a body part would be, you know, not all that upsetting. Now, don't get me wrong. Women do, with rare exceptions, have uteri. It's just a thing that happens. It's one of the things that defines what womanhood is. But womanhood, while not being less than possessing a uterus, is more than that. Biologically, we know what womanhood is. Chromosomally, skeletally, even the brain chemistry of men and women is different. And it's a difference so obvious that babies, literal babies, can figure it out. Babies. You know, babies, the tiny new versions of people that come out every 9 months or so. They can tell what a woman is. So again, I'm not saying there isn't a biological aspect to womanhood. I indeed think that womanhood is entirely biologically determined. I'm a theologian who advocates non-reductive physicalism. And we don't have anywhere near enough time to get into that. But here's the thing. Anna Kasparian is right. Whatever else she may think about a whole host of topics, she's right about this. Calling women birthing persons and people who menstruate and people with uteruses is about the most ludicrous and demeaning Orwellian claptrap since the last ludicrous and demeaning Orwellian claptrap to come from our social betters. Because while, yes, women's biology is inseparable from who they are, that's not all they are, any more than saying being a mother means someone who has been impregnated. Is a mother someone who has been impregnated? Yes, and that's both a necessary and a sufficient condition of being a mother, with the exception of adoption, but that's not the point. Yes, a mother is a woman who has been impregnated, but that's not all a mother is. And I would like to say that the truth is that everyone actually knows that. But I'm not so sure they do. In fact, I strongly suspect that there are a whole lot of people who are deeply confused, people who have believed the lie, who think that people with penises can be women and that men can get pregnant. I think that there are people who actually think this. We call these people deluded. And sadly, there are a whole lot of deluded people in our society. Why or how they were deluded is a bigger conversation and one that I've been trying to have on this broadcast for the past decade. But for the purposes of today's episode, the key is simply that people are deluded. That's the point. That's what we need to catch on. People are deluded. But here's the funny thing. As deluded as they are, there is a little sense of sanity that keeps poking its unwanted head in and announcing itself. It's almost as though reality were incessantly and cruelly reasserting itself at every turn. Damn and blast, curses. You see, friends, people who agree with Anna Kasparian on literally every other thing she says are now calling her all kinds of vile and hideous things because she simply doesn't want to be called a person with a uterus. That makes her a villain. I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you're living in this culture and society and you haven't studied the French and Soviet revolutions, you're missing out. Because I get to read the news before it happens. Godless revolutions always end the same way, with a suicidal race to prove your revolutionary bona fides to save your own skin. You can never be revolutionary enough. It is impossible in a godless revolution to ever be permanently, sufficiently radical. There's a whole host of reasons why, not least of which is this. Godless revolutions fail and you have to find someone to blame. But there's another reason, and this is the one that I want us to focus on today. Godless revolutions become totalitarian because they are built on lies because they are godless. Let me say that again. Godless revolutions, they become totalitarian because they're built on lies, because they're godlessness. The godlessness leads to the totalitarianness because the totalitarianness is built on the lies, and the lies are built on the godlessness. It's circular. Samuel warned the people of Israel, do not turn to useless idols. They cannot help you because they are useless. Lady Wisdom warns people not to trust in folly because foolishness will betray you in the end. Jesus says the truth will set you free. You see, friends, for all that people like to mock Christianity for being bigoted and intolerant, it's only in a Christian society where long-term intellectual diversity can happen. That's because the truth is durable. Lies are fragile. Now, that doesn't mean that lies just fall apart of their own accord. A China teacup can sit there on the shelf and be safe and sound and exist for centuries. It can have boiling water poured into it and over it for centuries and centuries, but it's still fragile. An anvil is durable. You can pound on that thing with a 20-pound sledge all day, every day, and all you're going to do is wear out some hammers. Try swinging at a teacup with a lump hammer, and you'll find out pretty fast which one is fragile and which one is durable. You see, the truth can exist in the presence of lies. A society built on truth can tolerate lies. Lies won't undo such a culture overnight, but a society built on lies can't tolerate the truth because lies are fragile. They cannot handle real scrutiny. They cannot survive in the wild. If you haven't noticed it by now, and I hope and pray you'll see it now if you haven't, lies are weak and fragile. Now, the people behind the lies might be strong and powerful, but lies are always fragile. All the lies in the world are as nothing before the truth and its simple demonstration. It doesn't matter how longly or how loudly you shout a lie. A demonstration of the truth will leave the lie undone, at least for those who have eyes to see. And there's the rub, because as the old saying goes, it's easier to fool people than to convince them they've been fooled. But that's another story for another day. The point is this, that the British Parliament walked out of an extremely data-heavy and painfully convicting speech about the failures of the British government to protect people, and the British MPs didn't want to hear it, and the British press didn't want to talk about it. Talking about this is to simply draw attention to it. If people find out the cost-benefit analysis of continued COVID mRNA shots and boosters is so insanely out of whack, if MPs were to debate the issue and if the news were to report it, then an awful lot of people would draw the conclusion that the British government was complicit in a ruinously expensive public health campaign that is demonstrably and unarguably done incalculably more damage than it's done help, more harm than good. And there are simply a lot of people who don't want the British public to think those thoughts because the lies of big pharma and big government are far too fragile to stand up against the merciless scrutiny of reality and good data. The point is that someone like Anna Kasparian, who is so far left that she might as well be blue, a woman who has openly advocated for all the transgender nonsense, all the talking points, all the things, she says something as innocuous as that she doesn't want to be called a person with a uterus, but wants to be called a woman, and now she's Armenian Hitler. Now, we could point out the ludicrous and painfully hilarious hypocrisy that the transgender movement engages in. We could point out that they demand that all of society, all speech patterns, all dictionaries themselves have to be changed. Our definitional concepts of reality have to be altered to fit their whims. No one is allowed to call them anything but the thing that they demand to be called at that exact moment. These narcissistic, delusional, tyrannical, solipsistic cry bullies, they demand that you bend to every whim. But if you simply express that you want to be called a woman, the very right that they're demanding hilariously, then you're doing violence. It's hilarious. I mean, I'm laughing, but I'm laughing in a sardonic way, the way that one laughs at a classical villain whose hubris is his own undoing. Anna Kasparian bought the lie. She promoted the lie. She tried, and I believe will continue to try to silence the truth. But even the little itty-bitty truth that she wanted to hold on to was too much, and so she had to be attacked. The truth had to be thrown into a burlap sack, tied to a cinder block, and tossed into the crick as though it were a sick puppy. Brothers and sisters, do you see the pattern? Do you see the pattern of ignoring the truth and silencing the truth? Do you see the pattern of trying to suppress the truth? I hope you do. They have to suppress it. Lies have to suppress it because lies cannot live in light of the truth. So let's proclaim the truth and let's not be afraid of lies. I hope and pray we will. And I hope you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.